broadcasting on the internet and at 90.1 FM from high atop Burnaby Mountain. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded August 30th, 2023. While the rain's return reminds fall is coming to Vancouver Island, what remains as unchanged as the changing seasons here, though, is the continual rapaciousness of industry in the province and the serial iniquity emanating the capital city's heart, the BC Legislature. Whether Social Credit, New Democrat, Liberal, BC Liberal, NDP matters not a whit to mining, logging, and fishing interests, or changes by a millimeter the plans of the frackers and pipeline layers, suburban sprawl makers, and downtown condo infillers, they can always be assured business will continue as usual. Joe Foy is the Protected Areas Campaigner with the Wilderness Committee. An old hand, Joe was employee number one way back when the committee was known as WC Squared, or Western Canada Wilderness Committee, and 40-some-odd years later, there's still so much work to be done. Joe Foy in the first half. And as the eyes of the world are focused on Ukraine and Hawaii and Africa and all the places people are harried by natural and manufactured disaster, Israel has been busy going about its project of making the lives of Palestinians impossible in Gaza, hardly survivable in the occupied territories, and a daily terror for its neighbor Syria. Just yesterday, Israel again sent missiles into Aleppo's international airport, shutting down its last functional runway. Israel has bombed Syria throughout the summer and before, with neither sanction nor censure from Canada and its rule of law defending allies. Ken Stone is with the Syria Support Movement International and Hamilton Coalition to Stop the Wars. We talked last about the EU's 7th Brussels Conference on the Future of Syria and the Region, an annual event held without Syrian participation on the first day of summer past, Ken Stone and Syria's long resistance to empire in the second half. But first, from felled ancient forests and the spotted owl's imminent extirpation to the fracking pads and pipeline paths across the province, saving what remains with Joe Foy and the Wilderness Committee. Welcome back to the program, Joe.
Well, good to be here, Chris.
Well, it's great to speak with you. You know, we last talked in August of 2019, before everything changed, about the Fraser Canyon's endangered spotted owl population and how the, quote, provincial government's reluctance to take a stand may make the difference between its survival or extirpation. That was the sub on your Watershed Sentinel article, Wild Times, Canada's Last Wild Spotted Owls. Now, I'm almost afraid to ask, you illustrate in that article of BC Timber's logging practices within the owl's diminishing habitat. Now, what's happened since? How have the owls in the Fraser Canyon fared since we last spoke?
Well, not well. I mean, we got ourselves down to the last wild-born owl in the wild. There are about 40 captive raised spotted owls in cages in Fort Langley. And so the hope lies in enough habitat being there for owls when they're released. And the hope is that BC and all of us finally figure out how to successfully release captive owls in the wild. Three were released last year. One had to be brought in from an injury from hitting a train. And two more were found dead this spring. So all the released owls have passed. Since then, two more owls have been released, I'm told. We don't know their fate. And so it's a real battle. All of this is happening in the Fraser Canyon with tremendous support, I must say, from the SPUSM First Nation, who dearly want these programs to succeed. But we're having a real problem right now with getting the province to stop logging, stop handing out permits for spotted owl habitat.
And you mentioned that in the article, too, about the government's role in all this. And I don't know if everybody is aware, or how many people are aware of what BC Timber is and what role they play and what role we might as citizens expect them to play. Can you describe briefly, Joe, who and what BC Timber is and how they play into this?
Well, BC Timber Sales is, I guess I would define it as an agency of the provincial government, which means we own BC Timber Sales. How BC Timber Sales works is they have specific cutting areas, usually valleys, areas in the province, including in spotted owl habitat. And BC Timber Sales are the ones, is the agency in these areas that decides what's going to be logged. BC Timber Sales will contract and pay for the logging roads oftentimes, and then will put out these areas for bid. And the idea is smaller operators get those contracts and then log these areas. Some of the problems involved are, this is, in our view, highly subsidized logging. The government-owned agency is paying for the roads. And BC Timber Sales has ended up in places, a lot of places we don't think they should be, in old-growth forest and in areas such as the Manning Park Skagit Headwaters Donut Hole, which clearly should be protected wildlife habitat and protected. Now, the government of British Columbia has done a couple things with the People's Logging Company. First of all, they got them out of the Manning Park Donut Hole. That was a good thing. And second, they have said that they are not putting in BC Timber Sales cut blocks into the provincial government's priority old growth deferral areas. And so that's another program the province has. And so that's a good thing too. The problem is, unlike a protected area campaign where you either get the protected area or you don't, when you get it, it's a great success. Endangered species campaigns are different. They're similar to protected area campaigns because you want to get the habitat protected, but it's not a success until the species says it's a success by doing better. And so, so far, the spotted owl is not telling us anything we've done so far is good enough. And that's where we are with that campaign.
I'm thinking you can't just insert a species into any old place. I mean, first of all, how much habitat would a viable reproducing pair of spotted owls require, and what type of habitat? I know that when some of these areas that the government crows about saving, they're maybe mountainsides that don't have the, you know, much trees to begin with. They're above the tree line, or, you know, other areas that aren't really viable for wildlife. And I imagine the spotted owl has a fairly specialized requirements.
Well, they do, and I've often felt for those of us that live in Spotted Owl Range, which is from Lillooet down to the U.S. border and from Manning Park over to Howe Sound, basically, and there's something like 3 million people live in that region, I've often felt that the spotted owl is saving us, not the other way around, because the spotted owl needs forests that are mid to low elevation, and these are the kinds of forests, these lower elevation forests, which have been largely left out of the provincial park system with really bad impact, hugely terrible impact, for instance, on salmon, because in our region here, we don't really have an intact salmon river left that doesn't have roads and clear cuts in it. So the work to protect low and mid elevation forests as spotted owl habitat really gives us in this region a second chance. Spotted owls need older forests, upwards of 120 years old. Now, what we're seeing here in the lower mainland is companies are going back in there at 60 years, 70 years, and knocking down the skinny second growth trees in areas that once grew giants. And you know they grew giants because you can still see the stumps. So not only does spotted owl need all the remaining low and middle elevation old growth forests protected, but spotted owls also need, because too much has been logged, a whole bunch of second growth forests that could become that 120 to 140 year old forest in the next 50 years. And so the federal government has actually put out a plan, and it's in a draft form now, but they've done the tremendous service of mapping out all the critical habitat we would need to protect in order to bring the spotted owl back from the brink. And it's that habitat that I can see the province continues to issue logging permits for.
Yeah, cut it now and keep talking about it. And we only have to drive on the province's highways when you see logging trucks to see. I mean, you're getting down to these little pecker poles, as you described, that they're maybe half of the age that we're used to seeing taken out. I mean, irregardless of first growth, even second growth forests. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Joe Foy. Joe is the Protected Areas Campaigner with the Wilderness Committee. And he's been with the WC, or WC Squared, as us ancient guys might refer to them, Western Canada Wilderness Committee of Past, for, what is it now, Joe, 40 years?
Something like that, 40 years. I started volunteering for the Wilderness Committee in 1985, started working at the Wilderness Committee in 1988. So it's been just a tremendous privilege to be able to do that.
Well, we often look back into history at the practices of former or previous generations with some sense of the appalling. And I wonder if future generations will look at this moment that you and I are speaking in the same way, the kinds of practices and the effects that those practices have on the natural environment. It's clearly unsustainable, but also it just seems so reckless and ignorant.
Well, yes, but we have hope. I mean, as we've just spoken about, for spotted owl at least, it is possible if you leave the second growth alone for a century and a bit, you can bring that habitat back. I'm reminded that in the 80s, when I first started, they were still logging Vancouver's watersheds. And by a simple not a simple campaign, a very hard-fought campaign, but by doing a simple change, it changed everything. The simple change was, in the 1990s, the managers of Vancouver's drinking watersheds lived up to their mandate to make decisions based on the production of clean drinking water for the citizens. And that meant that logging ended. So they just flipped from number one job is to provide timber to number one job is to provide clean drinking water. And we need to see another switch throughout the forest that says, hey, we're in a biodiversity crisis. Number one job is to hold on and restore the biodiversity. The other stuff comes under that. And that's what we need. And it's getting clearer and clearer every day, not just here, but all over the world.
Well, I wish I could say the same for Vancouver Island, where there's still logging going on in Nanaimo's watershed. And here in Victoria, the rampant sprawl that we've seen to the west of the city, I mean, it's really remarkable. A whole new city, in fact, is being cut out of the forests there, which is right on the edge of the watershed for Victoria and the whole region. That's, you know, 300,000 people or thereabouts. And there seems to be little being done. In fact, it goes right into the riding of the former premier, John Horgan, who on his departure, and in the introduction, I write quite witheringly about the political process in this province. But when we see what happens with our former head politicians like John Horgan, a longtime NDP premier, who half a day into his freedom from his resignation from the legislature, he joins a coal mining company, and not only anyone, but Teck Resources, one with a really terrible record. Now, I think I'll be the counterbalance to your positive message here, Joe, and say, I think we've got a lot more to go here, and I'm not sure we're going to make it.
Well, I would agree with you. I think that, you know, the one thing that's become abundantly clear over the last 40 years to me is you really have to judge governments not by their words, but by their actions, both good and bad. And what we're seeing right now in the forests is that governments are, our provincial government is addicted to the current maintaining a level of cut rather than maintaining the life support systems. And that's becoming increasingly more expensive for all of us when water systems are wrecked and we have to spend more money to fix them, when biodiversity disappears and the mountainsides start to peel off and we, you know, down into the valley bottoms and we wonder why. Well, the reason is that our land managers have not been made the switch to really looking at protecting the life support systems on behalf of us all.
Well, and we're experiencing fires. It's not unusual to have forest fires in British Columbia, of course. We have them every season, forest fire season. That season, it's been argued, has been exacerbated by climate change. But I would say, too, that it's exacerbated by the policies, the timber management policies of the province, as you described, not only in the way they take trees and what kind of trees they take, but also in practices like glyphosate spraying over areas, which is continuing and is going on, killing everything but the targeted species, and killing trees that act and other flora that acts as a fire resistant, fire retardant. And now we're seeing these fires that once they get going, they really take off like nothing else. Are you guys working on the glyphosate issue as well over there at the Wilderness Committee?
We are, absolutely. Charlotte Daw, our policy campaigner, is passionately working on that issue. Glyphosate, clear cuts, all the changes, all the roads, a lot affects fire and fire behavior. And the idea that clear cutting a big area could somehow reduce fire risk is wrong-headed. Oftentimes, clear cuts just become great big piles of kindling. That's how Vancouver burned down. That's how we had some spectacular fires in Vancouver's watershed in the early part of the 20th century. So fires, absolutely. The other issue that I'm seeing on fires as I travel around recording logging in endangered species habitat is that at a time when fires are increasing and burning more endangered species habitat, there is a very strong argument for super reducing levels of logging just to try to make make available enough habitat to keep species going in the face of these gigantic fires. Clearly, keeping the biodiversity of the landscape is our best way forward. Certainly, fireproofing individual properties is really important, getting the bushes away from homes, that kind of thing, and looking at materials for home building, community, how communities are put together. All of that is really, really important. But kicking the heck out of the forest habitat is absolutely not the way to go. It will not make us safer. It'll put us more at risk. What we need to be looking at is taking the pressure off endangered species, other species, essentially the biodiversity out there, so that we and they can get through this period together.
Yeah, well, biodiversity is the largest, the most prevalent in the first growth forests. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke here with Molly Murphy. She was up at Fairy Creek there, where a second attempt to slow down Teal Jones, maker of cedar shakes and shingles for roofs that for houses, fancy houses in forested areas that catch fire during these events, incidentally. But I mean, there's nowhere greater where biodiversity is greater than in these forests. Have you followed Fairy Creek and what's the Wilderness Committee's opinion of what's going on there and, well, what went on there over the last couple of years and now what seems to be happening again?
Well, I'm just really happy that people, so many people are engaged in Fairy Creek. Look, Fairy Creek is important on so many levels. Intact or intactness in watersheds is now very rare all throughout southern and central BC. So anytime you have a intact valley, even a little one, it's just a precious, precious thing and a great crime to road such a place and damage such a place. The other issue is old growth forests. We're now just a remnant. I mean, over here in Spotted Owl Habitat, I've laid out on a Google map, Earth map, all the priority old growth areas that the province has designated, and as well as all remaining old growth forests. And it's we're getting down to remnant outside of the intact valleys, which are very, very rare. And so we need to not be logging any of these things that are left. They are so rare, and the low elevation ones are extremely rare. So Fairy Creek is brought attention to this issue. It is shown the provincial government as very difficult, but not impossible to move off their position. I think it's really, really important that instead of standing around with their hands in their pockets, the province needs to be coming up with dollars to help forest-dependent communities and First Nation forest-dependent communities be able to protect their local intact valleys and old-growth forest. And the province has a, heaven knows, a fortune was torn out of these forests, causing great damage, and those communities deserve not a government that sits back with their hands in their pockets, but a government that joins with all the people and does what it takes, including financial support, to get these places protected, and not be arresting their own people for doing the right thing.
Yeah, well, I think whose hands are in whose pockets is always an issue. I'm looking at the website, wildernesscommittee.org. There's a piece up here from early June, just to swing back to the Spotted Owl. Minister Stephen Guilbeau to protect critically endangered Spotted Owl. This talks about a suit brought between a Wilderness Committee and with EcoJustice to force the feds to do something about to get these spotted owls listed and to try to save them from extinction. How is that suit progressing?
Not as fast as we'd like it to. But it looks like we'll have a court date in the fall. The federal government, through the Species at Risk Act, have the power to declare an emergency order. The minister has already got on record saying that of the several hundred cuplocks in Spotted Owl federally mapped habitat that are now on the books, if those are all logged, it will make the recovery of the Spotted Owl very, very difficult. And so the minister has, in the minister's own words, Mr. Guilbeau has said that he is prepared to make an emergency order. What an emergency order would do is it would go to the federal cabinet, and if the cabinet doesn't kick it out, if the cabinet accepts it, then the federal government takes over Spotted Owl habitat in the province of BC, which is a big, big deal because the province runs the forests. But we believe the federal government needs to do exactly that because the province is running the species into extinction, and the Species at Risk law is put there for just this case. So we're looking at a fall a full our day in the courts. And in the meantime, I continue to get out on the land and record and document all these places that are being logged while we wait to get into court.
Yeah, and in that article, there's a great quote. You say, quote, "We are seeing the BC government permit spotted owl habitat to be mowed down and carted away on logging trucks right before our eyes. Empty promises will not stop extinction. Only action can do that." What about the provincial government now? We've seen a change at the leadership level over the last year. As I mentioned, John Horgan has found his true level with Teck Resources, the coal miner. And something that I should say, Mo Sohota, a former NDP from a former NDP government, a high-level minister, he says that on these boards, you need voices like a counter voice like Horgan's. Mo, of course, he went and joined industry after his tenure as well. Adam Olson of the Greens says, no, this particular company has one of the worst mining records, just to provide a little context. What about the new government? Does David Eby, our new premier, show, and with his new cabinet, show any inclination to slow the grinding up of habitat, as you describe?
Well, we continue to ask, but I have to tell you that one of the great things that technology, and to be fair, the BC government and the federal government has given us, is great mapping data. So I know exactly where the federal critical habitat is. I know exactly where the province's priority deferral areas are. And I know from going online where all the approved and proposed cut blocks are. So that's great. What's not great is they are still coming down. What's very really plays with your head is you can go online to any one of those three sites, the federal government's spotted owl plan, the priority deferral areas, got a website. IMAP BC shows you where all the logging is. On the priority deferral areas, you read it, and it makes you think that, oh, we're all solved. They map these areas. They get it. They get it. Then you go out and see them being essentially clear-cut right in front of your eyes. It is very strange. Because you're way out in the bush, because I'm way out in the bush, I'm the only one looking at this. You go online, it sounds great. You go out in the bush, they are still knocking this stuff down, and I leave that at the premier's doorstep. Great words, but the actions are still absolutely terrible. The province needs to get in the game, because these places are so rare. They're little remnants with the odd intact valley, like the odd rare intact valley like Fairy Creek.
Well, the map is not the territory, and I fear that future generations, should we be so fortunate to have such a thing, will look at us and be appalled by what we allowed happen. Again, it's Wilderness Committee. That's wildernesscommittee.org. Joe Foy will be there waiting for you to show up. Joe, thanks a lot for coming on and talking about this with us today, and maybe we won't wait 4 years before we talk again, eh?
Well, we'll see what happens. I'll still be here.
I hope.
And I'd love to talk to you.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I want everyone else to stay tuned. I'm going to take a break, but I'll be back with Ken Stone. We're going to talk about Syria's next color revolution in the making, even now. Thanks again, Joe.
Thanks, Chris.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York, Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Online at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
Chicago, Jakarta, Helsinki, Cape Town, Sao Paulo, Manchester, Bangalore, and somewhere in Russia our conflicts will be remembered.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, as the eyes of the world are focused on Ukraine and Hawaii and Africa and all the places people are harried by natural and manufactured disaster, Israel has been busy going about its project of making the lives of Palestinians impossible in Gaza, hardly survivable in the occupied territories, and a daily terror for its neighbor Syria. Just the other day, Israel again sent missiles into Aleppo's international airport, shutting down its last functioning runway. Israel has bombed Syria throughout the summer and before, with neither